What's going on, sports fans, and welcome back to another episode of Insights from the Locker Room. I am your host, Derek Bone Crusher Dennis, back in a building. I hope you guys enjoyed the first episode and got a chance to listen to my thoughts on the truncated season in the CFL due to COVID-19. Hope you got a chance to listen to me and Charleston chop it up and doing a little talk and that powwow and that back and forth. Hope you enjoyed that interview. And last but not least, I hope you enjoyed my thoughts on what's going on in the world right now. It's been a crazy week. It's been a crazy year. Like I said in the first episode, 2020 has been a rough year for everyone. So every time I get a guest on here, I'm going to ask their thoughts on that topic and how they feel and about the year in general, how it's been going, and what's their plans to move forward in the future. But I'm not going to do too much powwowing with you right now because I had a special guest join me this week. My boy, Alex Singleton, Philadelphia Eagle linebacker, former CFLer. Me and Alex, kicked it on the podcast for a little bit, talking that talk, and he dropped some knowledge, man. It was a long talk between me and Alex. I think he was on the phone for maybe about an hour and a half, so I'm just going to get right into it. I hope you guys enjoy it. I hope you guys keep subscribing, keep liking. I'm going to try to get the podcast on more outlets. It's on about 5 or 6 right now, but I'm going to keep pushing. I need to get it on iTunes for all you Apple users. I'm going to try to get it on iTunes. I'm not done with that. But, yes, enjoy the show. Keep listening, keep sending it to your friends. Let me know how you feel. Hit me up on Instagram at Insights from the Locker Room, or Twitter at Insights from the Locker Room, or hit me up on my personal stuff, 6BoneCrusher3 on Twitter and 6BoneCrusher4 on Instagram. Let me know how you feel about the show. If you want certain people to come on, if there's things you want me to talk about, you want to hear my viewpoints on certain things, I am a man of the people. I love the fans, I love feedback, and I welcome it with open arms, whether it's positive or negative. So without further ado, let's get into this next segment.
Mama, there goes that man.
Joining me now, I have two-time West Division CFL All-Star, two-time CFL All-Star, 2017 CFL Most Outstanding Defensive Player, 2018 Grey Cup champ, and currently Philadelphia Eagle linebacker Alex Singleton.
And Alex, what is going on, my brother? Appreciate you coming on to join me today. What's going on, man? Talk to me. What's where you at right now?
What's life looking like for you? Thanks for having me, obviously. And man, I'm in California training, doing the virtual off-season program right now, because this virus is keeping everybody at home. So we're doing the online training. Just been in the garage, just grinding, getting ready for this upcoming season.
Now, are you training in your own garage, or are you training in the garage of the trainer, or
at your own home? House in the garage that I kind of grew up training in. My dad's kind of gotten more equipment over the years, so every morning I kind of pull half of it out on the driveway and got a real good setup. So even though gyms are starting to open, I've kind of just said I'm just gonna stay home and keep working out here, because it's been honestly for me the best off season so far.
So what's it like? What's it like being at home, back home with your family? This is now your first official NFL offseason. What's the transition like for you now, as accustomed to how things you were doing this year for us, and now doing the NFL offseason?
The NFL offseason is obviously way shorter, or usually is way shorter than a CFL offseason. We were done the middle of January, and we were supposed to be back in Philadelphia the first week of April. So it was really only supposed to be a 12-week off season. I planned on coming home for that and training. But this year's obviously extended, so it's kind of a weird first off season in the NFL. It's kind of more back to that CFL style where you get 6 months off and then you better come to camp ready to go. So I think, luckily for me, I'll be more acclimated to that than a lot of the guys will be. But yeah, it's nice being home. It's nice being around the family. I'm sure, you and some of your listeners have seen me and my sister have been doing, some workout classes together online. And then also we just do them as a family. It's been a lot of fun being home. It's good. It's always good to be around the family.
Right. I'm glad you brought it up, because I was going to ask you about the workouts with your sister and still continuing your work with special Olympics and all of that. How much of an influence has your sister had on you now, being able to kind of incorporate her into your off-season movements and still be able to do your community work from home Just talk about the impact of that.
My sister, you know, has been my biggest, you know, inspiration, you know, for playing. It's the reason I play, you know, with the energy and the happiness I have, because, you know, just watching her, you know, compete in Special Olympics and, you know, the other participants in Special Olympics, you know, they just bring that positive energy, that good light that, you know, if they're competing and can compete at the whatever level they can compete at, you know, to be able to do it professionally or as a job, you know, whichever way you want to put it, you got to be able to enjoy it. And that's something I've taken, you know, from that community. And then just, you know, being around my sister, you know, just getting to kind of do workouts with her every couple of days during the week. It's been really special, and it's cool to, you know, see her progress, because, you know, obviously doesn't work out as often, you know, as I do, but, you know, just to get her out every couple of days and just see, like, from week one, how many pushups she could do till now, you know, it's been really cool. It's been really impressive. And like you said, it's been inspiring the whole time.
Yeah, man. So now I'm going to transition to more, a little bit more. We're going to talk about football right now. So explain to me, you're from California, right?
Yeah, I am.
How in the hell did you end up in Montana?
See, I thought you were going to ask how I was Canadian.
No. That's coming up. That's coming up. We all know you're a fake name.
Man, Montana State was my only offer coming out of high school. I didn't have no other calls or no other offers. So yeah, I packed a bag and I moved to Montana.
So this, how did the recruiting, did they find you? Did you find them? Did high school coach kind of reach out to them? Like, how did that occur?
Yeah. So we had, you know, one of the guys that I played with, you know, one of my good friends, Richard Mullaney, he was our top receiver. He's one of the top receivers in the state. So he had, you know, every Pac-12 offer, you know, pretty much almost every school in the country was coming to our school. But I was, you know, a little under, I mean, in my senior year, I was only like 6'1", like 205, and I was only 17 still. So I hadn't even grown, you know, and a lot of the teams came in and just kind of were like, we don't know what he's going to end up being. You know, he's not tall enough to be Division I. And, you know, there was teams like Weber State, Sac State, and back then they were like 0-10, you know, 1-9 teams. And Montana State was the number one or number two FCS team in the country when they offered me. Their linebacker coach came down and was actually the recruiter of our area. And he came in one day and offered me, and I was like, sweet. I mean, I'm coming. I went on my official visit and I committed that next day.
As most people probably don't realize, you're pretty much born and raised in the U.S., but you have Canadian status. That's how you, you know, kind of became a draft pick in the CFL. So how did that come about? When did you find out that you were actually Canadian in a sense, in your heritage?
So I knew kind of my whole life that I was Canadian. And the only reason, you know, because my mom's Canadian. My mom was born in Canada. She lived there until she was about 12 or 13 years old. And then her family moved to Arizona. So, you know, I always knew we were Canadian, mostly because my dad used to always give my mom a hard time for being Canadian. And so forever, you know, it was funny that my mom was Canadian. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was in Seattle. I was bouncing around from practice squads. And I remember my agent just asked me one time, you know, because Travis Lule went to Montana State. So playing in the CFL wasn't, you know, it was something that was a great opportunity. You know, the best player to ever play at the school was doing it. So it was something you watched. And so, you know, he asked me one time and I was like, hey, I know you have to be Canadian or can be to play there and it helps you. And I was like, well, my mom's Canadian. I don't know if that can help me or anything. And so he kind of looked into it. And so I was 21 bouncing around the NFL and filed for Canadian citizenship then. And at the time I was actually on the Ottawa Redblacks neg list. So if I ever would have came up to the CFL in 2015, I would have been an American player for Ottawa.
Okay. Ottawa seems to always find a American / Canadian linebackers, because apparently that was the story for the guy who was the number one pick this year. Similar instant. Linebacker found out he was Canadian. He was on Ottawa's next list. He was going to come up. They found out he was Canadian. They told him to get his paperwork and some draft, and now he was the number one pick. So,
man, I don't know. Ottawa wasn't telling me not to come up. They were they were doing the opposite.
They were telling you to come.
Oh, yeah, they wanted me to be American, because once they knew I was coming up as Canadian, it wasn't going to be as easy.
Yeah, it wasn't going to be as easy to get you. Well, I mean, as a parent, man, you lit up the CFL from the minute you walked through the door. I remember you as a rookie coming in, and all I knew was, you know what I'm saying, We got an American player who counts as a Canadian. And I knew you had a leg up, but, I mean, I'll be the first one to admit, I don't think any of us thought you were going to be as good as you were, which was a great bright spot for our team, which made our defense really, you know, like a different level. You could tell, man, just having you as a ratio breaker was big time. So kudos to you, man, having that mindset. That's what I always loved about you, is that you had that killer mindset, that football mentality that most of us American guys were raised with. And that was something that, you know, was sorely needed for our defense, you know, when you arrived, man. So, yeah, just to get into it a little more, talk about your early time in the NFL a little bit. I know you bounced around three teams. You were Seattle, you were New England, you were Minnesota. What was your first experience with the NFL like, as opposed to, you know, the second time around when you got a chance to go back?
Man, I think the biggest thing was learning to be a pro. You know, coming from a smaller school, you know, obviously football was, you know, in Montana, I mean, you can figure, you know, there ain't not much else going on besides football. But, you know, just the habits I had to learn, you know, because obviously I wasn't, you know, not the best player in the world. You know, I have to work every day to, you know, hone in on my craft. And like you said, have to like find that dog in me and make sure, you know, it's not just on game days. And I had to learn to make sure that was there all the time. And it was things I learned, you know, when I got to Canada. I don't think, you know, even not getting heavily recruited, you know, still going to Montana State, you know, I played as a freshman. I didn't really have that big, you know, some people would say that would be adversity at that point, but I loved getting to go to Montana. I loved, you know, getting to play. And there was not many things that, you know, really like hit me in the face until, you know, the first time I was cut by Seattle. I was like, damn, maybe I'm not good enough at this. And then, you know, you had to work every day and kind of find things that could make you better. But, you know, Seattle ended up cutting me six times that year, Minnesota once, and New England once. So
wait, hold on, time out, backtrack. Six times?
Six times. They cut me once in the middle of training camp. They cut me after training camp was two. I went back at week three and was cut again, and then twice in December. And then,
bro, that's the thing about the NFL. I think a lot of people don't understand is that, like, man, they're so cold-hearted with it when it comes to, like, the business side of the football. And like I remember being in Chicago and getting cut after preseason. You know, Mark Trestman just became the head coach and all that, and him and Eric Cromer telling me like they knew I was good enough. You know, they wanted to keep me on the team, but, you know, the GM had, you know, invested money in vets and all this other stuff, so they just didn't have space for me. And they wanted to keep me on P-Squad, but the GM wanted to keep a tackle instead of interior lineman. So then they cut me, sent me home. I drove home from Chicago because I had my car with me. Drove home from Chicago. They called me 2 days after I get home. So I drove, took me less, like 11 hours, drive to Chicago. They called me 2 days later, tell me they want me to come back. They're going to re-sign me to the team. So I come back. They re-sign me for the week. The next the Monday after we play Sunday, cut me again. And the only reason, and I found out the only reason why they signed me for the week is because they had a veteran dude, and if he was on the roster for week one, his salary was guaranteed. So they cut him, brought me back because they knew me. They knew I knew the team. They knew I could come in and practice for the week and help out the team, get ready, blase, blase. And then cut me and then re-sign him so that his salary wasn't guaranteed because he had no injury issue. That was the NFL.
Yeah, that is 100%. And I would even – but, you know, we have these stories about the NFL and, you know, any story I could tell about the CFL, you know, because, like you said, I was drafted and got the opportunities, you know, we saw the same thing happen there. You know, there were guys going through the same thing. I mean, you're going, shit, through the same thing right now. So it's such man. It never ends, no matter where you are, and it's crazy.
Just to draw back into your time in the CFL, what was it about the Canadian game that you loved the most? Like, what was the part of playing the Canadian game that you loved the most?
Man, you know, it was funny. I saw a picture. I got a picture today. You know, some lady liked, you know, my post from today, and yeah, whatever. And the messages ended up being from, you know, a Grey Cup picture of me holding the Grey Cup. And just thinking back, like, you know, our time, you know, from 2016, I mean, I know you were gone in 2017, you know, letting us whoop on you for a year and then coming back to win. You know, just when I look back, one, the love that the city gave us, you know, 24/7, you know, because I lived in Calgary for 3 years. And one, the love the city gave us. Two, you know, just really the true brotherhood that I think we all had. Like, that was – I really loved playing football again. Like, it was a different, you know, chemistry. And then not just on our team. I think there's a bond in the CFL between all the players. It's such a – you play everybody so many times, it just becomes – really, like, you're playing against some of your best friends, and you might not even know the guy outside of football. And it just – it's a strong community that, you know, it's really cool, especially – it's almost like a, like, Pop Warner atmosphere, because everybody seems so close together because you play each other so often. And that's – I mean –
kind of like – that. It, yeah, that's feeling like college – like college ball. That's how it felt in college. Yeah, I think that's what I always quit the CFL to. It felt like playing college ball again, because – even when you played against other schools, even though you didn't know those dudes, it was just the competitiveness and the camaraderie that was built, just because everybody was like, you know, we was playing football for the love of the game. It wasn't about, you know what I'm saying, it wasn't about the money, it wasn't about it was just about the love of the game. So, that's kind of what my favorite thing about the CFL was, too. Let me ask you, because I heard a lot of rumors about after you got your shot to go down to Philly, and at the end of training camp, it was a lot of talk about you coming back to the CFL, hearing rumors about you in the airport, about to get on the plane and go to Calgary and all this stuff. So for give us a backstory about that. Kind of tell me what transpired in that time of when you know, you thought you were going to make the team and then they told you wasn't, and then, you know, you was going to make that the jump to come back, and then you ended up staying. Like, what? Give us the real story behind that, because everybody heard rumors, but we need to hear from the horse's mouth what really happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, shit, the end of training camp. So in the NFL, you know, you play your 4 preseason games. You do everything you can, and, you know, you either make the team or you get cut. And so that 4th preseason game, we played the Jets, and I ended up, you know, going out. I had 3 special team tackles and 18 defensive tackles. So after the game, I was like, man, still I'm kicking this team. You can't do nothing. Like, you know, I did exactly what I was supposed to do. You know, I think the first time around I was like, yeah, you know, I didn't do everything I could. And then obviously my whole time in the CFL, I was like, cool, I did everything I could. And then now this, you know, this game, this Thursday night, I'm like, cool, I did everything I could. There's no way they can cut me. Like, I'm good. And then, so, you know, it was Friday morning and they, you know, called me up and were like, hey, can you come in with your stuff? And I was like, okay, you know, I know this call, obviously I'm getting released, like, shit. All right. So I started texting my agent. And I was like, well, let's, you know, not just any team in the CFL. You know, I wasn't just going to go anywhere just to, you know, do anything. I was like, hey, just, you know, let Calgary know I'm being released, you know, just to kind of start talking, you know, just to kind of see what they would be willing to offer, if they even have a spot, you know, still saved. And then, you know, we'll just kind of go from there. And so, you know, I went in, got released, and, you know, I was sitting down with the GM, and it was the conversation of, you know, I know there's a chance of you going back to Canada. We want you to stay and be on our practice squad and all this stuff. And I was like, you know, it just kind of felt like, you know, just more blowing smoke just because they can and they think they're the NFL. And like we just said, you know, I love the CFL. There's no hiding that. I think everybody knows that from my social media, from, you know, the way I, you know, watched Calgary games this year to, you know, everything. And so it was easy for me to go, man, I did everything I could the other night to make this team and they're just gonna cut me. So I was like, all right, let's see, you know, because all I heard my whole career in Calgary too is once you're, you know, they, everybody said when you go to the NFL and if you get cut and come back, Huff will not negotiate with you and he's not going to give you what you think he will. And I still remember this from like the first conversation, like with Henry Burris back in the day, like they're, you know, so I've had, you know, with everybody, and I was like, damn, that, you know, that sucks. But, and then the first call I had with them is, it was, you know, top money. There was no, like, if, ands, or buts. There was no questions about it. Like, I didn't even have to have conversations. It was more like, here's your money. Like, let's book your flight. And so I was like, man, you know, that, you know, if no one else has ever gotten this love, and, you know, I still have that love for them. It wasn't like I felt like an eagle yet, you know, because it was just summer and training camp. So I didn't have that yet. And I still, my full heart was in Calgary. So I was like, man, I still had my apartment for another month in Calgary. Like, so it was, It was all right there, sitting right there. And then I was in my hotel room on the Sunday, and I was talking to Dave about flying up to be able to play on Labor Day for Monday. It was Sunday morning. I had a flight at like 10 a.m. And I talked to him. I talked to Monson, and it was kind of not that it was ever I was really going to ever be able to play in the game, but it was kind of like, you'll be here for the game. And I was like, I'm all in. And, you know, I talked to Dave, you know, a bunch. I was like, yeah, I'm going to talk to, you know, see what, because they can't talk to you about being on the practice squad until the Sunday.
Right.
And so then on Sunday, you know, the GM called my agent and was like, hey, we want to sign to the practice squad. And I was like, no. Like, I, you know, it's not, I'm going to make twice as much going to Canada as I will being on the practice squad here. And I just don't want to be on a practice squad anymore. Like, I want to play, right. I just want to play football.
Right.
And then so the GM called and he, you know, was willing to give me some money. And I was like, no, that's not. That's like, you know, a week's salary for somebody. And so eventually, you know, he got to a point where I was going to make more than I was coming to Canada. And I said, all right, there's 8 weeks left in the CFL season. And this is what kind of made my decision. If not, if it was the beginning of the CFL season, I truly believe I would have gone to Canada. But it was there was 8 weeks left in the CFL season. You know, we were just starting. So in the back of my head, if I would have left, I would always had that feeling like, damn, they were willing to, you know, pay me to at least be there for, you know, practice squad. But my thing was, is if in, you know, in the next 8 weeks, if anything were to happen to any of the guys on the team and I would have gotten my chance to play, would I be sick about it? Or even after that 8 weeks, would I be sick in December if I was at home training and I saw a guy get hurt, or if I saw, you know, just some random guy running down on kickoff for the Eagles, would it really bug me? And so I was, though, in a car, in an Uber to the airport when the GM called me and made that final match. So I turned around and went and signed the practice squad deal with the Eagles.
Wait. So let me get this right, because I've heard about this in the league before. I've known a few guys who are practice squad guys, but they've been offered, you know, more money than what a normal practice squad guy makes. So what you're telling me right now is the Eagles gave you more than what a typical practice squad guy gets to come back and be on the P squad.
Yeah. So what they did for mine was they guaranteed me like a whole season's contract.
Oh, okay. So they guaranteed that you would be there for the year.
Yeah. So if they were to have cut me, you know, the first, say, you know, I was there for 1 week of practice squad and they cut me, they would have to pay me a full season, and then I could have came to Canada. So I was like, you know, I ultimately was a win-win in my situation.
Right.
For an 8 week kind of test for me, you know, because I also said, you know, if in 17 weeks I don't make the team, you know, and I talked to Dave a bunch. It's not like, you know, these conversations weren't by myself. You know, I talked to a ton of people. And so Dave was even one of the guys that was like, you got to stay. Like, I'm, you know, I would do anything to have you here, but like, you need to stay. He's like, I've done it. I did it. You know, you deserve it. Like, you got to stay with that offer. And so I was like, okay, I'm staying. And
that was my feeling. That was my feeling when I heard how things were playing out. Yeah. I was like, to be honest, Alex would be a fool to come back now. I would just stay on P squad. It's 17 weeks. Somebody's in there. That's the thing about football. Somebody's going to get hurt. Somebody's always going to get hurt. I mean, you hate to see it. You don't wish it on anybody, but somebody's always going to get hurt. So.
And my thing was, I was just happy, you know, at the end of the day, the GM never lied to me. They ended up releasing two veteran players on week two, and then I was active after that. So it wasn't even an injury. Yeah. He was being genuinely honest. He was like, we paid them. We're going to give them a couple weeks. He's like, you outplayed them, and we're gonna give them a chance. And once they didn't, it was – they straight up released them, and then I was playing. And then I was kind of like, okay, you can settle down and trust people when that kind of stuff happens. And so,
I was able
to, you know, feel comfortable. And now I 100%, you know, feel myself as a Philadelphia Eagle, which is.
The dream come true, man. I'm listen, me for one, as a former teammate of yours and somebody who's kind of seen it, at least the progression from when you started in the CFL to now, man, I'm super happy for you, man. I'm proud of you, man. You deserve it. You bust your tail for it, man. And I would love for you to have a 10-year career in the NFL, man. That's my wish for you. So keep doing what you're doing, brother, and holding it down.
Man, I appreciate that, because I, you know, I tell people all the time, like, a lot of people don't know you're one of the only guys that, for everybody in Calgary, you know, that got to play with us and against us and win with us, and then was always you know, a brother for us. Like, that's what, yeah.
You know, I never treated nobody is... different. Yeah, I never treated them. Even after I left, you know, some guys, they leave.
Just Micah. Like... Just...
I didn't want to say no names, man. Because me and Micah, you know what happened between me and Micah when we played the first time when I was just sad.
Standing right there.
Man, nah. But I still, listen, I always had love for guys, man, especially 2016 for us was a crazy year, man. We went through a lot as a team. Even though we didn't win the Grey Cup, we went through a lot as a team, and it was, you know, it was an up and down season, and that's kind of where I always tell people, that's where my bond for everyone got so strong, because all the crazy stuff we went through with losing Milan, and, you know, all that stuff that we went through in 16 was just where I felt like, you know what I'm saying, these dudes are gonna be friends and brothers for life, man. And I remember, you know, after we won the Cup in 18, man, the party and the talks we had, all that stuff, man. That's memories you can't duplicate. You can't never get back, though. That was always fun. Tarleton came on the first episode, and he set the tone. I don't know if you heard the first episode, but he set the tone for me. He was on here telling me on linemen that he liked to play against, that he knew every time he played them, he was going to get stacked on teams that he knew he was going to destroy. So I'm gonna ask you from both perspectives, because you played in both leagues in the last couple of years. When you was in the CFL, what team, what offense, what running back, what quarterback did you always knew every time you played them on a schedule, you was gonna have a monster game?
Man, I mean, I'm gonna be honest. This is gonna sound cocky as all hell. I mean, when that CFL schedule came out, I think it was a Calgary mentality, but it was like, man, I got 18 weeks of just racking up tackles. Like, there was no
man, so the entire league
team. Then, there wasn't a team I didn't put on blast. I don't think.
I so the entire say, the entire league was barbecue chicken for you. You would eat every game.
Every game, because I think you would be the first to say when you in 17. Because I was talking, I talk a lot.
You
a
are,
lot
of people. You do talk a
the
lot.
The smile is one thing, and it's nice for the TV. But I do talk. I like to. I have fun. I would say it's more fun than just like talking shit.
Yeah,
but. But I would say, I think in 17 and 18, there were teams that hated me, especially O-linemen, that yeah. really were like, man, this dude is not going to beat us this week. And I think that like almost made me like be like, oh, I get to do it again. Like, oh, we're playing again on Saturday. Like, there was a weekly thing, like watching that Jordan thing when he would say like he'd make things up to get angry about people.
Yeah.
Like, I remember we'd be going to Hamilton. It'd be like 95. And I'd be like, man, these dudes are – you know, 5-8, you know, we're, you know, 12-1. Like, we don't have to play. Like, we can come out here and it doesn't matter. And then I just remember, like, we'd look at them and, you know, someone would say something and just be like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, let's just go embarrass these dudes. And I don't think it was just like, you know, I'm not saying that
you always
go with that mentality in a pro sports, but like, you had to. But my favorite teams to play, do it against was Edmonton for sure. I used to think their whole O-line used to be the big old, like, Jolly Green Giants. Like, they were all, like, giant but took up space but couldn't move anywhere.
Yeah.
And then I think, man, we played them 3 times in a row. Actually, we went Edmonton, Edmonton, BC, Edmonton, and I became the first player ever to have double-digit tackles 4 weeks in a row, and 3 of them were against Edmonton. And I just remember, like – man, going into those games, just being like, here we go. Like, and, you know, they had dogs, you know, for their skill positions. Like, it wasn't like it was
–
they had some of the best offenses ever, you know, with C.J. Gable, you know, obviously Mike Riley. They had Zylstra. You know, they got all these dudes that was just like, you can't
–
you know, they had Bowman. Like, there was just so many guys that you looked out. But it was like, those were the ones that you would get fired up for. Obviously, you know, B.C. for whatever reason – was kind of that same way. They ran, you know, with Johnson, and then between Lule and, you know, it was just, you know, with Manny Arsenault, they always ran these plays. You know, I remember when Chris Williams was there, he used to always just try to outrun me. And on one of the under routes, he threw it to him and I caught him. And he was like, how the fuck are you still next to me? Like, it was just that, I don't know. You know, I think it was definitely Calgary, and you got like, you know, all you guys that were before me that just were like, I mean, if you're going to play here, you got to be good as shit. Like, there's no,
right,
you can't,
right.
You can't be the weak link. Like, you got to make
it better.
No. So it was like, especially on our defense, you just like the guys that I played with in 2016.
Yeah, that defense in 16 was nasty.
I mean, the only two new guys were me and Tommy Campbell. Tommy was a CFL All-Star straight off the bat. I mean, and then it was me. Everybody else around us, I mean, you name a guy was an All-Star. So it was just, and I was telling people what to do. So it was like, man, I better figure this shit out fast. And, you know, luckily I did. You know, we had the coaches and the guys around you to where if you made mistakes, nobody could tell anyways. So it was kind of, it was nice. But, man, other guys I like to play against. To play against Andrew Harris, for sure. I think
Andrew Harris barbecue chicken for you, huh?
Oh, yeah, he knows. I'm the only one he never broken a tackle from. Come on now. I think he's one of the best. He's one of the greatest of all times, for sure. You know, in the CFL. But, you know, that's my guy. I'll talk to
him. Yeah, he was easy.
He breaking tackles. You know what I mean?
I love it.
I'm trying to, you know.
I seen a conversation the other day. They try to say, is Andrew Harris the best Canadian running back to ever play in the CFL? And no knock against, like you said, no knock against Andrew Harris. Yeah, he's going to have an asterisk next to his name because of the whole steroid stuff from last year. But he was nowhere near as good as corners. And I only played with corners for like two, maybe three games. But John Cornish was you never got a chance to play with Cornish, but I wish you did, man. Cornish was,
I know. I've seen the videos.
Cornish is unbelievable, bro.
The videos that they post about Cornish, like the last, especially the last 2 months, which I think, you know, obviously the league not playing right now sucks, but, you know, getting to see some of the throwback videos, especially at Cornish, because it's, you know, they, you know, he was so young being in the Hall of Fame. He retired for 2 years and was in the Hall of Fame, and it was like, man, is anybody that concussions? Good? And people, like, just the way people talk about it, man, I would have done anything to have seen him play, because it seems.
Yeah, my first game ever, 2015, I had just got to the CFL the week before. Pretty much practiced for 3 days. I was on Peace Walk for 3 days. The next week, I was starting against Hamilton. And I remember when they sent out, we came in for Monday, and they said, and I guess Dickie and them told him, like, you know, we got an offensive lineman who just got here last week. He's going to be starting. I remember Cornish coming up to me in the locker room and going, hey, man, you know, I'm excited. You know, I watched you in practice those 3 days, man. I think you're a dog. Like, I'm excited to play with you, man. I know you're going to go out there and kill it. And he was the first person to walk up to me and say that. And we went out and played Hamilton, and I had, like, a hell of a game. That's pretty much what started my CFL career. Kind of like I remember Pat telling me after that game, he was like, you pretty much took the spot. Like, there's no way we can't put you on the field. But I remember, like, just – making barely, like, as soon as I'm getting on my guy to make a block, and I would just feel Cornish just zoom by me. And I would be like, oh, I'm like, yo, he's passed me already. And Cornish used to run, like, so angry, bro. Remember one run he ran into my back, and I swore he knocked the vertebrae loose. It was ridiculous. And everybody, you know me, I'm a big dude. Like, Cornish ran on my back, and I was like, oh, man, I thought I slipped a disc. But I played two games with him. He caught that last concussion before he retired when we played Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, bro, like, Cornish, I played two games with Cornish, and it was probably – he's probably one of the illest running backs I've ever played with. And I only played with him for two games. So I can't imagine playing, you know what I'm saying, like, an entire 18-game season. I mean, dude led the league in rushing, and he missed half the season with an injury. Like, who does that?
That's you hear those things about him, and it's like – that's, and especially with the quarterbacks that were in Calgary. It's not like he was – they needed to just
playing
run
with
the ball.
Bad quarterback, right?
He was right. With Bo and Henry and, like, just doing
it. Yeah, good quarterback.
Drew, so, like.
Yeah. So, man, so shout out to, I give a shout out to Andrew Harris, but sorry to break it to you, brother. He ain't the GOAT, man. You did some things last year, some good things, some not so great things, but you ain't the GOAT. Probably Johnny Cornish, but. Cornelius Singleton, you a barbecue chicken, so barbecue chicken alert on Andrew Harris.
he's like, yeah.
And last question. Talk to me about, now that you got a full season in the NFL, what game after I understand the first game is probably, you know, it was a little jitters, butterflies, all that. So what game did you catch your foot in and you was like, bro, it's you know, what's the difference between the CFL and the NFL to you? Like, was the NFL harder? Was the CFL harder? Like break that down.
Man, you know, honestly, you know, because from my, you know, I only played special teams this year, which, you know, is definitely different from what I've been doing for the last, you know, few years. And I would say CFR special team wise, I mean, the CFL's got, you know, CFL is hard to play special teams. I don't care who you are. You got, you know, nothing gets fair caught. Everything is returned. You know, there's the every kickoff's getting brought out. You know, there is no kicks in the end zone. Like, it is, it's different. I think the NFL, you know, special teams is kind of like a tone setter for the sideline. But in the CFL, you know, special teams is truly a third of the game. And so from that aspect, from that aspect, you know, the CFL, you know, takes precedent on that. Even though the special teams is very important in the NFL, it's just not, it's not the same. But I would say, man, the first, you know, because we played, the first game I played in was Sunday night in Dallas. So that, and, you know, obviously, you know, being an Eagle, you know, going down to Dallas, I mean, that's one of the biggest rivalries in the NFL. One of the most heated
ones. How nice is that stadium?
Oh, it's, that stadium's unreal. It was the coolest. That's what, you know, that's when I got my NFL little jitters, was that warm up, you know, being in that stadium on Sunday night, you know, seeing Jacinda Anderson walking down the sideline, you know, the guys, the Sunday night crew, you know, walking around.
Right.
And then just watching it. Just those lights in Dallas, like, it's brighter in Dallas. They got, like, man, they have like stripper poles. There's not strippers dancing, but there is girls dancing like in the end zones, and you can see them from the field. And I'm talking, it's straight up, and their stadium, the lights are like, you know how usually when you play in a dome, there's like just the big lights on the top?
Right.
They had big lights in the middle of the stands, and then it was like more fans, and then more lights, and then another section of fans. So you couldn't even see when the game was going. You couldn't look up and see like where people ended or where the stadium ended. Like, it was just – it looked like it went on forever. And so, and the first play of the game, you know, I was the center on KOR. So like, we walk out, we're on kickoff return, and I'm standing on the middle of the star on the 50 yard line in Dallas, like, you know, for Sunday night football. And I was like, man, there, you know, after this moment, you know, I don't, you know, there isn't much else I need to do in my football career. You know, I've won championships, you know, I've done everything I could accolade wise. You know, I've met some of my best friends for the rest of my life. And then now this, like, literally standing on the Dallas Star on Sunday Night Football, playing against them, like, there's just, you know, that's kind of it.
Yeah.
And so that was that kind of, like, aha moment for sure in the NFL, like, oh, you're here. And then, you know, the second the ball's kicked, it just became football again. But, yeah, up until that moment, I was like, damn, this is different. This is special.
What do you think about the type of athlete in the CFL as opposed to NFL? A lot of fans like to argue that NFL has such superior athletes. Do you think the athletes are any different in the NFL as opposed to the CFL?
I would say, I tell people, this is kind of how I would describe the NFL, period. I would say is kind of like a 1% to a 0.5% league, where people only know 1% of the league. You know, everybody knows mm-hmm. their Tom Brady's, their Julio Jones's, you know, the big names. They know one guy, maybe two guys on every team. You know, on our team, you know, DeSean Jackson, you know, Carson Wentz, and you might know, you know, Alshon Jeffrey. And that, I feel like that's even pushing it if you're not a football person. So outside of that.
I love Alshon. That's my guy right there.
He's the man. Alshon is the man.
Yeah. We was in Chicago together as rookie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot you're old.
Yeah. I'm old.
So, you know, I say the NFL is a 1% kind of league. You know, everybody only watches for those 1%. And after that 1%, the other, you know, 99% are the exact same guys you see every game in the CFL. And I don't, you know, I don't care what anybody tells me. It might have been from when you were in high school till that point that you just been given the opportunity to be in the NFL. Or you worked every day as hard as you could. But I would say it's the exact same thing for CFL players. You know, they did the exact same thing. And maybe one fork in the road, either way for either guy, puts him in the CFL or the NFL. Or sitting at home on the couch, because I know enough guys that are doing that should be playing in the NFL. much less.
You're talking to one right now.
And that's what I'm saying. There's more. And there I mean, obviously it's hard, and that's the whole reason there's like 2,000 people in the world that get to play pro sports or pro football. Like it's probably one of the hardest things in the world to do. And then you got position wise, you know, I remember one game this year I was looking, you know, we had four active linebackers and I was like, damn, like you know, you cut that down. Like if you would have told me in high school, I would have been one of 100 guys playing on a Sunday in the NFL. It's like, you know, you don't believe it.
Right.
And so that's how I've always looked at it, that after the 1%, like, you're right, Julio Jones, if he came up to the CFL, would destroy everybody. But he destroys everybody in the NFL. So there's not –
That's right. If Julio's like a generational athlete. Like, you have those guys who are generational athletes who, you know, they're just head and shoulders above everyone else. And those 100%. those are normally like the superstars of the NFL. But I think a lot of people confuse the fact that you see those superstars and you think that's every guy in the NFL, and it's not. It's not every guy in the NFL. It's just those guys that are just freaks. Like, I remember being in Chicago. When I was in Chicago, our defense was, like, crazy. I remember looking at Brian Urlacher, who was 6'4", 6'5", you know what I'm saying, 260, but could run a 4.5. Like, that's a generational athlete, bro. That's not a common thing. Julius Peppers, who's 6'7", 310, but just, you know what I'm saying, just a freakish athlete. I remember we used to go to the I tell people all the time, actually it was funny, the greatest athlete that I've ever seen with my eyes, my own two eyes, was Josh McCown, the backup quarterback for like the
– Oh,
the,
Josh McCown is unreal.
It's right. He was in Philly.
Yes. At 42 years old.
Bro, I tell people all the time, Josh McCown is probably the greatest athlete I've ever witnessed with my own two eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Because we used to go play pickup basketball at the Lifetime in Chicago. And I remember the first day Josh pulled up, and I'm looking like, if you look at him, he looks like a typical, you know what I'm saying, like a typical white guy. Like, you think, like, oh, you know.
He's got his Jordans on. Like, oh, yeah, I know.
He looks like a typical, you know, white guy that you wouldn't think much of him. But it's like, as soon as he started dribbling the ball, he threw the ball off the backboard and 360 dunked it. And I looked at him like, what the hell? And then he came back and then he East Bay. And then when we was playing pickup games, he looked like white chocolate out there. He was just crossing people up and dishing dimes and dunking on people. And I was like, bro, yo, I had no idea you was like that. And it's crazy because I seen a clip on Twitter come out of him playing basketball. And people were like, yo, who's this dude? And I'm like, yo, that's Josh McCown. Like, that's – people don't realize, like, the athletes in the NFL, like, there are a few guys who are, like, generational athletes, bro, who are just different. Like, you've never seen nothing like it, and you probably never will unless you get to experience that. So, I appreciate you, you know, kind of put some disbelief to that, because I get into arguments all day with people on Twitter. Anybody following Twitter, you know, I argue with people all day. But it's just fun. All day, but it's for fun, man. You gotta do something to pass the time, man. We have a lot of time on our hands,
especially right now. But yeah, that's the best way to put it, though. Is like, you can, I mean, you put Scary Terry at returner on any NFL team, no one is gonna be surprised he's out there.
No,
you know, so you know, there isn't anybody that, you know, you could pull. You know, I will say the only thing, you know, and some people aren't gonna like this, you know, sometimes. Sometimes some teams, and never in Calgary, I don't think we ever had that problem. I would say some teams, the Canadian depth, maybe some of those guys wouldn't be able to play at that level. But
yeah,
but and that's some teams and not many.
I mean, that's being honest, though. I mean, that's the point of my podcast, man, is I need guys to come on here and be truthful. And that's the honest truth, right? You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's hard to say it because those are our counterparts that we play with in the Canadian League, and we don't want to disrespect our teammates. That's the last thing we want to do. But you gotta call a spade a spade when you see it. And this could a lot of people like to argue that Canadian athletes are just as good as American athletes. And I mean, let's be honest, if that was the case, there would be no need to have a ratio.
Yeah. I mean, because I see both sides, and shit, I cheated the ratio. So I mean, anyone can say whatever they want, and you know, it is what it is. And but, yeah, I mean, I would love if we could put Charlie Power or Will Langlis running down on one kickoff with me again.
I know you're aware of everything that's going on right now in the world. And I just, you know what I'm saying, I gotta ask a question, just kind of, you know, what's your thoughts about what's going on right now, your feelings and your viewpoints of how you view things.
Man, yeah, and I mean, for anyone listening, like, we didn't talk about this before, so it's not like you done nothing. You know, I think it's, you know, shitty. I think it's, and that's, you know, what happened is, you know, horrible, but it's not just one thing, you know, one time that happened. I think that's the perspective, and I guess I should start by saying this. I think, you know, I 100% will say I come from, you know, the white privilege that everybody's talking about. If I didn't play pro sports, I wouldn't know guys that were other races and had grew up in different backgrounds and had different stories than me, you know, just, you know, without that, I wouldn't. But luckily for me, for the last, you know, 12 years of my life, that's all I've known is guys coming from everywhere and having to come together for one common goal and ending up, you know, loving one thing, but becoming best friends in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I think that so much of this country has no idea about. Yeah. So, I was thinking the other day, I'm sure there's, you know, black communities that have never, you know, met white people, and the cultures, you know, they don't understand, they don't know. And there's this communication that's never happened that, you know, like me and you would both say we have all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know your background. I know where you're from. I know your family. You know, we know a little bit of everybody's story, and we come together and kind of, and so I even think from, you know, my perspective that it's almost like laughable at how disgusting the country is, because we come together and, you know, mm-hmm. can be together. So it's like sickening to the stomach to watch. And then we had a team meeting on Monday, and, you know, cause we're doing all the virtual meetings, and our owner came on, you know, he's like in tears and just, you know, trying to explain like how hurt he was to be part of that privilege that doesn't understand. And, you know, we were sitting there, you know, a lot of guys told stories, you know, like D-Jack was telling stories, and, you know, a lot of guys on the team. And, you know, for myself, I was sitting there like, man, you know, I only know through your eyes. And like, luckily for me, I have so many friends that I've been able to have communication with my whole life. Mm-hmm. Or at least the last 10 years. So I understand, and I'm willing and will always and have been, you know, standing with you, and will be there as your brother forever. And it's something that I think, you know, a lot of people need to see, and that, you know, obviously haven't seen. And that's what these protests are about. I think the media kind of portrays it as, you know, these riots, as they want to call them, and, you know, people burning down cities and stuff. But I, you know, it's people protesting and just want to have a voice that hasn't been given.
Right.
And so I don't think it, you know, because, you know, I've been in so many locker rooms where, you know, we just have, you have conversations like that and have mm-hmm. deep conversations. And I think that was one of the things, like you said, we had a hard time in 2016, especially, you know, with the death of Milan. And I think that made us have those, I think we had those conversations, you know, then. And obviously it wasn't a cop that, you know, ended up killing Milan. It was, you know, a different situation, but we still had those conversations. You know, we talked about, you know, guys growing mm-hmm. up in different areas and having to experience, you know, crime or not having crime, but, you know, still, you know, how to fight through that and come together. And it's just, it's harder on a scale of 360 million people. But I think, I hope this time it gets heard by everybody and is just, you know, acknowledged. I think, you know, it's a lot of movement that has to happen, but, you know, this is definitely the right direction, and I'm happy to see how supportive, you know, just, I think the right message is getting put out. You know, you need to hear before you talk, you know, you do just listen. Cause I think listening, and don't, you know, you don't have to start with the big picture.
It's understandable.
I think that's something that, you know, needs to be said, is you don't need to just go on, mm-hmm. you know, social media and look up, you know, someone's name, you know, that their family member, you know, passed away, or, you know, find something out of your context, you know, start in your circle. Cause if your circle doesn't change, you know, the bigger circle doesn't change. So if you, you know, just reach out to someone, you know, and, you know, find something, make a connection, you know, somewhere with somebody. Don't, you know, doesn't have to be a superficial connection through, you know, social media. Everybody knows somebody of a different race, because it doesn't have to be white and black. It could be anything. You know, people races struggle, and you should learn about other ones. And, you know, it'll kind of, once, you know, people are enlightened, I think it'll, you know, make it better. And that's, you know, it's so sad to see, especially, you know, like I said, you know, being around everybody for the last, you know, 12 years, that, you know, I just never thought that this was even still going on with how, you know, close we all get as a family. It's sickening and it's sad. And, you know, especially you would especially think, you know, as a police force, there's almost so much like a team that it would just not even be an issue.
I think that's something that a lot of people, I've seen a lot of athletes say that recently, that the world should be more like, you know, how in a sense a football locker room is, because out of most sports, we have the largest body of, you know, of people that have to coexist and learn to be together, and they come from all walks of life, different backgrounds, but the game itself, that is what draws us together and makes us build bonds. And because those bonds that we build with each other inside the locker room, they show on the field. And I think that's why a lot of teams that, at least when we were in Calgary, why we were always successful, because it wasn't about, you know, this guy hanging with this guy who's of the same race. We all hung out with each other all the time. Like I remember, you know what I'm saying? I would call you some nights. You would call me some nights, like, yo, D, what you doing? I'm going to come hang out with you. I'd be like, yo, Alice, what you doing? I'm going to come hang out with you. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's something that, you know, we learned from being athletes and being in a multicultural environment where we had to learn to coexist with each other, because that's the only way we were successful. And I think that's something that the country has a hard time grasping, is that everyone is just sticking to their own lane, and no one's trying to figure out what is the common goal that we all need to get to be successful, that we're all successful. Appreciate you putting in your two cents on that. I wanted to actually get your viewpoint, because I know our relationship, I know how you and I are with each other, and it's something I felt like, you know, people would like to hear your opinions and your viewpoints. So I appreciate you for that, my brother. I'm going to ask you one more question. And I wanted to ask you this in the front tip, because I went to school in Philly. I went to Temple University. I consider myself a Philly guy. What is your favorite thing about the city of Philadelphia being there for 1 year?
Outside of game day? Because game day for the Eagles is okay. If you want to see the true American, like, diehard sports fan, you go to Philadelphia, because it's unreal. Bar none.
Unreal. Philadelphia.
But favorite thing in Philadelphia, man,
unreal.
I'm a weird history guy, so I really like the city, how it's old, like, especially Old City. I lived in Old City. I love that, all that old, just kind of history.
Old City.
My first weekend, I you know, still going to
the old brick roads and all that, yeah.
You know, even the old parks, you know, you just walk around and you see, like, the history in the park, how, you know, at one point it was like a burial ground during, you know, the American Revolution, and then now it's just a park and people are laying there. Like, man, 200 years ago, this was, you know, there's thousands of bodies here and we're just hanging out. Right. Like, I think that's so interesting. So, yeah, the history that Philadelphia has is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, it was. I remember being like, wow, these people are different in Philadelphia.
Love really it. is a very different city, but it's fun, man. I love my time in there. I hung out on Delaware Ave a lot when I was in school. Hung out on South Street, hung out in all those areas. And I think the only thing I didn't do a lot of, I didn't do the touristy stuff too much. I did a little bit of it, but because I was there for 5 years, I did everything else in the sun in Philadelphia. So I just wanted to ask, you know, what was your part? Have you ever? All right, the last question.
Gyms on South Street.
If you had to pick a place to eat a cheesesteak, where are you going?
You don't like Gyms? That's where KJ took me. That's where KJ took me the first time, so I had to go.
Gyms is good, though. Gyms is good. Listen, KJ's from Darby. He's not even from Philly. So I'm getting this with KJ all the time, and KJ goes, yo, I'm from Philadelphia. No, you're from Darby. Okay? There's a difference. It's like me being from Buffalo, but saying I'm from New York City. Okay? But... but my favorite place to go to was Max's, and that's in North Philly by Temple University Hospital. But that is the hood, though. So if you do go up there, probably gonna need a guy.
Oh yeah,
I'm pretty sure a couple of your teammates told you to stay out of North Philly.
It's no joke.
Yeah, North Philly's not the it's not the It's not the greatest neighborhood.
I'll ask but some guys. Some guys will for sure have been
that
there.
That place holds near and dear to my heart because that is where Temple University is. And I'm, yeah. No, all you got to do is ask them, you know, that's the place that, if you ever seen Creed,
okay.
That's
I'll
the
go.
Place where Michael B. Jordan was getting his cheesesteak from. And that place is fire. Yeah. That place is fire. It's the best. But again, Philadelphia Eagles linebacker Alex Singleton. Alex, I appreciate you taking some time out to come and chat with us, man. Wish you all the best, man. Continued success. Hope the offseason continues to go well. I'm sure you guys will get back to playing football. We don't know about enough, but I know the NFL is not going to lose.
Appreciate
season.
It, my guy.
So
thanks
good luck
for
to you this year, man.
Always.
And we're going to be watching.
One of my guys forever. Love you. And whenever you need me.
Always, man.
Man.
Thanks again to my brother from another Alex Singleton for joining me this week. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. That's it for me here this week. Next week, tune in. I'm going to be talking about racism in sports. I won't have a guest next week. It'll just be me. But, you know, nice little half-hour episode where I'm just talking about racism in sports. My experiences with dealing with racism in sports and just the overall aspect of what racism in sports truly is. So yeah, thanks for tuning in. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. See you guys next time. And in the great words of my brother Russell Westbrook,
I'm out.